watch, not much to talk about in the early parts of the year. And now it feels like we just have a long laundry list to get to every single week. And I can't wait to talk about some of the stuff that we watched this week, some of the stuff that's coming up pretty soon. But yeah, I'm hyped for this week. I'm really hyped for our main headline discussion, though. Mandalorian, I feel like we got like a doubleheader to talk about this week now. So yeah, going to be a fun conversation there. And yeah, I'm really enjoying that season overall. But this whole week in streaming was pretty stacked. So yeah, I had a good time. What about you, Joe? I'm ready. Let's dive into HBO Max. I like it a lot. Yeah, you mentioned that it jumps around to various locations, so I'm cool to see something else that's just as interesting as the previous seasons. It's probably going to provide a lot of really unique visual landscapes compared to the previous seasons, so I'm curious to see how they do that. And yeah, I'm also curious who they're going to bring in for the cast, because both of these seasons have done a great job of stacking their cast and throwing in some pretty big A-listers, even if it's for like smaller roles or bigger roles. They'll bring in some pretty big names, and I feel like season two is even bigger of a conversation piece than season one was, so I'm hoping that season three, they'll really have a lot of attention. It'll be like kind of a Knives Out situation where everyone's going to be like lining up to get at this season. Yeah, if you like Knives Out, this is very similar to like the tone and the vibe of Knives Out. So check this out if you haven't seen it. But yeah, definitely recommend the show, and I'm looking forward to the next season. Yeah, I won't be shocked. It's done that before. The show kind of goes into hiatus for a little while and then comes back again. And I definitely feel like in the way that the landscape of comedy and TV is changing so much that maybe Larry David's kind of like, you know what, I'm gonna take it off for a couple of years and see how things shake out with this whole HBO Max thing, this whole streaming thing, this whole COVID thing. You know, I got to see how it goes, you know, and I can see in a couple of years he comes back and does it again, you know. But of course, he's getting old. You never know. Maybe he's really just sick of making the show, you know. Yeah, I don't expect it to be a lot of, not even, not to the scale they were doing before. You know, they were doing a lot of catch up, a lot of like tying two sentences that take place off the course of like 20 years together into an episode, you know. And I think this is going to be more compact, especially that they shortened it to 8 episodes. It makes me feel like they're going to be telling like a singular kind of arc within this drama, you know, because I thought the first season was moving pretty quickly through a lot of the narrative in the plot that was available for them in that opening section of the book. So I'm wondering if this season will slow things down, not jump as much, and just kind of like build out one individual little arc within this storyline. I think that's a better approach than jumping around to the highlights and not really building out the individual moments that really made Game of Thrones shine so much. So even though it's a shorter season, I feel like it makes me think they're going to be a little more focused and slow things down a bit more. Yeah, I'd rather have eight amazing, perfectly crafted episodes than have them try and like squeeze it out to 10 just to hit that limit, you know, and all of a sudden we have a couple of filler episodes and, you know, treadmilling episodes that don't really add anything to the narrative at all. Yeah, Succession season 4 just started this week, and I'm not caught up to season 4 yet, but I used the premiere of season 4, the final season of Succession, to kick my binge off once again. I watched the first couple episodes like a few years ago when it first started coming out, and I was not super into it, but all the buzz around it for the last couple of years made me feel like, you know what, I got to go back, and maybe I missed something, you know? Maybe I didn't really pick up on the tone or something like that, you know? So I went back, and I gave it another watch, started from episode 1, season 1, and if you don't know the plot of this show, it follows a extremely rich family called the Roys, who own essentially like a multimedia conglomerate, like a Fox News type of situation, where they're involved in media, they're involved in production, they're involved in all kinds of different aspects of the capitalist world that we live in, and they're like the wealthiest of the wealthy, and you're kind of following their exploits and their drama of trade, making these trades, making these different deals, but also the personal family dynamics, and like who wants to be in power over who, and who's kind of just the aloof doofus who's not really, you know, aware at all of what's going on, but is somehow like failing his way into all these really important situations. It's a very fun kind of farcical take on rich people that's also like really has his teeth out for them too. It's not taking these people easily or making them out to be light, you know, it's making them out to be very dangerous, but also kind of just buffoons in a lot of ways. So I'm really liking this way more than I thought that I was going to. I think the tone clicked with me a lot more, because when I first watched it, I was like, these people are despicable. They're like the grossest people on like the face of the earth. Why do I want to watch a show that's like hanging out with the people that I despise, you know, in real life? But the performances, I think, really capture these characters so well. And as you spend more time with them, you know, characters grow and kind of become not necessarily complex, but you can understand the humanity. And you have these moments where like they open up for a second and start to realize like the situation they found themselves in and what the reality of who they are is, and kind of the sinking feeling that can get in somebody. But in the end, they kind of clam back up and come back together and go back to being that cold-hearted billionaire that you hate so much. But I'm loving this. It's a very entertaining. You laugh at how despicable people are, and you also kind of get some insight into the pathos of these people. And like rich people like this usually are shown as like these completely pathologically evil people who are just, you know, calculated and geniuses who are like, you know, thinking they're so smart. But I think the reality is that they're just about as dumb as anybody else is. You know, they just kind of luck their way into a situation where they're rich, you know. And this honestly feels like you take like the Always Sunny in Philadelphia cast and just gave them a bunch of money, and they still would be the same idiot assholes trying to screw each other over and pull pranks up on each other and one up each other. But this time they're just doing it as ultra millionaires. So if you like kind of power play dynamics, like a Shakespearean conflict of the hires of society, you also have that, but you also just have the goofiness of these bizarre characters, and the clashing of those two tones is a lot of fun to watch. It's for the people who made shows like Veep, so if you've seen Veep, you kind of get the tone and the vibes going for. So I'm liking it a lot. I'm hoping I can catch up in time for season 4 and give you guys a review overall of like the whole series once I get up to the end of this season in time. But I'm really impressed by it, and if you were like me and you watched it and you weren't quite clicking the first couple episodes, go back and watch it, because it'll grow on you over the course of the first few episodes. And by the end of the first season, you're going to feel like you really are with these characters. And even though you hate them, you kind of feel for them in a lot of ways. No, I didn't watch it. I love Adam Driver, so I was curious to watch it. And I say, look, Adam Driver fighting dinosaurs, saving a little kid in space. You know, that sounds perfect to me. And then it was one of those movies that came and went so quickly in the theater. It was like there for 2 weeks, then all of a sudden it was gone. You know, it didn't really make a lot of money. But how do you make money when you're only in theaters for like 2 weeks and then they pull you? You know, so I didn't get a chance to watch this one in the theater, but I'm going to stream it. So I'll give my viewership that way. Yeah, and interesting. You know, I don't necessarily watch a lot of sports, but for some reason, sports documentaries can really have an impact on me. You bring the humanity out of that kind of stuff, and you can see the human struggle and the stories of these people that have grown into be like actual legends, you know, of culture. So I'm into it. Yeah, I like that because sometimes when you have the documentaries that are directly involving the person, it just essentially becomes like an advertisement for their brand. You know, it's like, look, I had some struggles, you know, maybe I made some mistakes, you know, but I'm pretty much perfect in every way now, you know, so follow me on Instagram. I did. I watched Swarm. I didn't know much about it at all, but it premiered at South by Southwest, at least the first handful of episodes, and then they released it on Amazon Prime. The whole entire miniseries, start to finish, is out on Prime, all 7 episodes. And yeah, Donald Glover, who obviously worked on Atlanta and was a great, like really insightful and creative show, and that also leaned into horror in certain scenes and kind of like surrealism in a lot of it. So he does a great job of weaving genres and weaving tones and giving you this kind of bizarre final product that doesn't necessarily fit into any specific niche or genre. And this is definitely how I felt about Swarm. It kind of has a comedy edge, kind of has a psychological horror edge, kind of has like this satire comedic edge to it. Definitely an intense thriller, though, a psychological thriller for sure. And it follows a woman named Dre who becomes obsessed and compulsively obsessed with this pop star, and the pop star is essentially like a Beyonce type of stand-in character where it's not Beyonce, but it's like essentially a Beyonce type, you know, and she has this whole following called the Swarm, you know, instead of the Beyonce's Hive, you know, so it's a Beyonce-ish character, and Dre becomes obsessed with her. It's kind of like a stalker, and It follows the psychological downfall of this woman who becomes obsessed with a celebrity and builds up this kind of pseudo fandom of people who are also obsessed and a following of her own. And it delves all kinds of ways into different genres and different tones. And I love that about this show because it doesn't, even stylistically, there's episodes in here that are totally different than other episodes. You don't even feel like the same show in certain ways. So I love this. It dives sort of into this big cult around this singer, and at the beginning, they claim it to be based on a true story, but as you go along, you sort of wonder, like, how, you know, what could be true in the story, you know? And then you could, by the end, you sort of feel like that was part of the question all along, and they were playing with your expectations the whole time. And I had a great time with this view. I don't want to get too much into the way that the plot plays out, you know, because it goes into a lot of unexpected places and tonal shifts. But I highly recommend it if you're a fan of Donald Glover's absurdist take on Atlanta, but if also you're a fan of like psychological mystery and horror drama, this is definitely one for you. And I think its commentary on fandom and fan culture and obsession and like the dark side of that definitely feels relevant to the contemporary world, you know? And I think it's a great, great new step for Donald Glover. And I can't wait to see what he does next, you know, because this is really exciting. It's not like an Atlanta level good show or anything like that, but it's a really great step for him in his career and not at all a step down for me. No, that's all that I've got. Definitely check out Swarm though. Oh, okay. This is a headline that This is the headline that makes me say, okay, I guess I'll watch it. You know, because if it wasn't going to be the final season, I might have been off the train right here. You know, but when you got one season left, I'm like, okay, fine. You know, I'll finish out one season for you guys and see how it plays out, you know? He better die, though. I can't watch it if he just keeps getting away with it and getting away with it and getting away with it. You know, at some point, the man's got to get it, you know? Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch this. You know, it looks like Power Rangers, and I feel like that's definitely the way to go because in someone else's hands, maybe this turns into some kind of like gritty reboot that's super high on the effects budget and takes everything really seriously and is all cinematic and it would be so bad, you know? And this feels like they're just going to do what Power Rangers is. It's going to be dumb and cheesy and fun, and you're going to have a bunch of goofy lines and bad effects, and they're going to fight, you know, aliens and monsters. And I like it that way. I feel like too often when we get stuff that should just be fun that's revived into this like self-serious thing that's going to make you cry about your mortality or whatever, and it's like, okay, this is supposed to be about, you know, hunting ghosts and laughing at exploding slimes, you know, why are you trying to make me cry this way, you know? And I feel like this Power Rangers is just going to give you what you want. It's going to be Power Rangers, they're going to be fighting people, and maybe you'll cry at the end, you know, but I'm feeling like it's definitely going to feel hand in hand with Power Rangers, and that's what I'm here for. I agree with you there, Joe. I'm looking forward to watching it. Any other news we got coming up for? Yeah. It's interesting, yeah, because Dakota Fanning and Denzel are also reuniting, I want to say, next year for Equalizer, another Equalizer movie. So you have some Man on Fire nostalgia coming back to life in two different forms. Yeah, I mean, for me, this entirely is sold on the cast. Like, who do you get as the young girl? Who do you get as the protector? You know, and that's going to be what makes this show either nothing or something. You know, and I feel like if you get a great director in there, I think that could really bring this to life. You know, give all four episodes or all eight episodes to like a Fincher or someone like that, and really bring this thing to life. I think that would be something that would be awesome. You know, and Fincher has history with Netflix. I'm sure there's bad blood over Mindhunter getting canceled. You know, but I feel like if they could lure him back and say, okay, look, you have eight episodes, you're not worrying about getting renewed or anything like that. Just make it good, and I think that would be a great call. Fincher, who would you cast? Do you have any calls for casting, Joe? The young actress. Yeah, I'm really excited to see what comes of this, because that's a premise that it's Man on Fire-esque. There's a little girl, there's a, you know, an ex-military guy. It could be good. Jon Bernthal would be cool. I think going to like a Josh Brolin would be kind of cool, like an old gritty kind of action actor who's a little bit older, you know, someone who's kind of past the action age, is kind of pulled back into it again, you know. Yeah, that's the thing. If they cast someone where it's like a Joel Kinnaman, I'm gonna be like, oh, okay, I kind of know what I'm getting out of that one, you know, but something a little more exciting could be what sells me. What did you watch on Netflix? Anything, Joe? I watched nothing this week. I'm glad you're liking it, Joe. I'm glad it turned itself back around for you, because you've been talking about that a lot. It's one of your favorites. What else do we got, Joe? Yeah, I was also looking forward to that show. I thought the TV format, the episodic format, was perfect for Indiana Jones. But I do think Lucasfilm has to get their ship a little bit more in order here. It seems like Disney as a whole is kind of plummeting itself into a little bit of a chaos moment right now. So, look, as much as it sucks to lose this one thing that might have been good, there's no guarantee it would have been anything better than Willow. You know, a fine adventure show that wasn't anything more than a moderately okay success, you know? But I think for right now, focusing on what made Lucasfilm is probably the best move and really getting that core franchise off the ground. But I do hope that this all Star Wars all the time goal is not forever, you know, because I think Indiana Jones is an exciting franchise. And I do want to see Lucasfilm create some new IP once in a while that might be the next Indiana Jones. You know, they're not going to be next Star Wars, but they could be another Indiana Jones. It could be another like moderately small couple movie franchise hit if Lucasfilm was able to get in there and pull something cool out, you know? I'm ready for that one. Yeah, I'm definitely curious what this will deal with. The marketing has been so coy and light, like they've barely released anything for this, and it comes out pretty soon. You know, that seems to be Disney Plus's MO is wait until like a month before and then just pummel people with marketing. And we'll see if that works for this. But I'm hoping that this is a good one because the Disney Plus Marvel shows have been entertaining and fine, but they have yet to have one that felt like a big kind of shake-up entry and kind of change things or made any level of an impact on the world, you know? At least since Loki, I feel like they've been a lot of low-key Marvel shows, and this feels like it's going to be a bigger swing and at least get us in a path for something like the new Captain America movie and the Thunderbolts that are going to deal with the aftermath of stuff like this. Oh, yeah, the Captain America / Hulk crossover is what it seems like it's going to be. Yeah. The Hulk featuring Captain America also. And I think a lot of that we'll know more of after this episode, after this series. I feel like this is going to give us a better idea of how this is all going to tie together and what this like spy thriller grounded side of the Marvel Universe is revolving around. Because a lot of the marketing is like, what are they really after? What do they really want? What's their real goal? And I feel like whatever that real goal is going to be a big factor into the MCU going forward. Yeah, I mean, when you see the headline, you're like, oh, cool, Jimmy Renner, you know, he's been through a decent amount of stuff, you know, in the last couple of, you know, a couple of months. It'd be nice to see how he's doing, get a recap on his life. And then you watch the trailer and it looks legitimately like a parody. Like you're waiting for it to cut to like Jimmy Kimmel or something, you know, and the whole crowd laughs and you're like, oh, it's actually the opening for the Emmys or something. Like it'll I guess it'll be nice to see how he's doing. And they have this really generic like stock hype music that plays in the background. Like if you go on like you know Google or you know any of those stock audio sites and you just type in like uplifting music, it's probably like the first one that comes up, and it like ramps up and up and up and up to like a hilarious degree where by the end it's like blaring in the speakers and you're like, how loud are they gonna get this music? Yeah, there's like times where it cuts to the to like text and he's like fight to survive and it has all this like epic stock footage of like a plow. I'm hoping that the interview is more produced than this because I honestly would not be surprised if they came out and they're like, yeah, we've had this through like an algorithm to edit it based off of AI. You know, this is edited by no one. I'd be like, yeah, you're right. I'm curious about it. I don't have a ton of Muppets history. You know, I saw a couple of the movies, but you know, it was one of those things I missed my childhood. You know, I didn't, for some reason didn't click with me at all. I never watched it. Never really knew much of the characters outside of the mainstays that grew into pop culture. So I'll check this one out. And yeah, for me, I'm coming in fresh. I don't know. I mean, I don't know all these characters, and so it'll be cool to get, you know, a fresh look at this. And I think that's exciting too for someone like me because it's like I don't need to know the personality types of these characters. So I'm gonna learn it along with everybody else, you know? Interesting. I'll definitely check this one out. I enjoy U2. I'm not a big U2 fan or anything like that, but there's some songs I enjoy, but I'm more on the skip side than the listen side, but I'll check it out. Your recommendation makes me feel like I'm gonna get more out of it and get some history of the band and some appreciation of the band, even though I'm not a fan right now. Yeah, go for it. Yeah, for me, what turned me off, not turned me off of the show, but what made me kind of lose track and interest of keeping up with it was it did feel kind of aimless. I felt like we were just giving cool little stories here and there, and I didn't feel like the characters were growing towards any goals. I didn't feel like the plot was moving towards any goals. And I compared it to Rebels, where, yeah, Rebels does have that, especially towards the beginning, where it's like, you know, they're just going off and doing these kind of cool things. But there did feel like there was a through line of these characters and the way they're going to develop and the way Ezra's going to change and the way Kanan's going to change and the way their history is going to come back at some point. I felt very invested in those characters. And the Bad Batch, I don't feel very invested in how they're going to grow, what they're going to become. They're just entertaining vessels for cool stories, you know, but I don't feel like I'm invested in what's going to happen next to Omega. Is she going to be okay? Is this going to happen or is that going to happen? And this is a show I probably would watch if when I eventually get around to binging it, you know, but it's not one where I feel any level of need to watch it right away because I don't feel like it's grabbing me in that way where I feel the need to watch it or the compelling desire to see what happens to any of these characters or this narrative. It feels like it's just kind of fun stories within the Star Wars world. And if you're a fan of these characters and this tone, you're going to like it, but there's not enough of like the force and the kind of mystical side of Star Wars for me to just kind of watch it, you know. And if I'm just going to watch it, I need there to be some kind of like mystical. That's what I attach to, I guess, in Star Wars is more of the mystical side and more of the kind of like spiritual elements of Star Wars. And this is just kind of like action adventure in space, you know. I'm ready, Joe. It's going to be a big conversation. I'm going to be mostly talking about this week, because last week was last week, but I'm excited for it anyway. Jar Jar Binks, he saved him. Oh. So I'll start with last week, because most of my thoughts on last week are okay episode, a bit kind of a meandering plot-wise, but, you know, it was nice to see Ahmed Best back. It was cool to see the answers to Grogu's flashbacks. I was overjoyed to see Ahmed Best, you know, in the elevator. It was cool to see him get a chance to really, you know, be back in the good graces of Star Wars, because I feel like it was not his fault the way that Jar Jar Binks was received or written or anything like that. He did the best he could do. He did a good job with that character. He brought a lot of life and energy to that character, and a lot of the memorable stuff that comes from that character, it comes in a lot of ways from Ahmed Best's performance of this very poorly written and poorly constructed character. But I'm happy to see him come back. I hope that this is not the last of him, because he seemed very happy about it. The fans seemed very receptive to him, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him play some roles in some feature shows, or maybe just a couple episodes of Mandalorian. That would be just enough for me. But yeah, I'm happy with that. But I thought this week's episode was really impressive. I thought it was a great, great action spectacle. And, you know, in the trailers, you see all these action shots of Mandalorians in this big battle, and you think, oh, that's probably like the end of the episode, end of the season, right? Like, it's going to be all these Mandalorians coming together for a big fight, right? And then I'm sure that's going to be what it is still, but I was kind of subverted with the big fight came right here, and you got a lot of great action, a lot of really cool shots that felt like they were right out of the movies. You know, it wasn't John Wick, but it was strong action, and it was well shot and well choreographed. And I like that this also gives you a look into like the non-function of the New Republic, right? And we've been told time and time again, like, oh, the New Republic's is like non-functional. It's all corporate, it's all this or it's all that. And we are actually get to see that now. We actually get to see like what the New Republic looks like, what it's like to work for them. We don't really get to see that at all. This is kind of the first time we've been able to see like the New Republic in action in that way. So it was cool to see that little tiny glimpse into that little tiny corner of the current Star Wars universe. I was almost ready to have him like walk around the corner and all of a sudden Leia standing there or something. You know, you never know what you're gonna get. But I like this episode a lot. I think it was a perfect balance of just being Saturday morning cartoon action with a bunch of, you know, action figures fighting a bunch of other action figures, but it was also a way to further the Star Wars story a bit and give you a little bit of a glimpse at a different perspective in the Star Wars universe and introduce some characters that I think are going to be coming back a little bit more and start tying things together a little bit, where it's not just about Mando and his journey. There's this other looming threat, this other bigger story that's being told like beyond the realm of Din Djarin that he's not even aware of, that I think makes this episode feel like it has a lot more weight than just cool action. Yeah, as soon as he started talking, I was like, "Oh, that's actually Zeb. That's an actual Zeb right there. That's really him." You know, and you start piecing together like, "Okay, is this a like a backdoor cast announcement essentially that he's gonna be in Ahsoka, even though he has been the one character not rumored that, and then happens to be the one that actually shows up, you know, of all the characters." I think that's pretty funny. The one that no one had on the radar is the one that shows up all of a sudden in Mando, and I would love to see more of it. The effects were pulled off really well, and I also want to point out, like, this is how you can do a cameo and not have it be distracting or like take away from the plot, you know, because if you don't know who Zeb is, he's just some alien who gave words of encouragement to the other main character, to the main character of the scene, you know. And if you know Zeb, you're like, oh, cool, that's Zeb, but it's not like you need to know who Zeb is to follow the plot of the scene, you know, it's just some alien. What else do we got? Give me some cameos. Oh, wow. That's really fun. Yeah, I mentioned last week that I mentioned briefly that I thought last week was kind of a meandering story where I felt like that was the first episode of this season where I really started to feel like, okay, where are we going? You know, I'm enjoying these little stories, but I don't know where this is all going to kind of click together into a singular thing. You know, this is kind of just kind of here. And then this episode for me did the same thing where it did kind of click together. I really saw like, okay, this is why we're spending so much time with this cult here, because they're going to be kind of like the shaky army of Navarro at this moment, but they're also going to be kind of retaking Mandalore. I'm curious, you know, how is the conflict going to go between this budding war tribe trying versus Navarro that's trying to pick itself up back up again and be like a crime-free environment? Is there going to be some conflict there between the old ways and the new ways? I feel like that's pretty interesting. We spent a lot of time getting to know the ways of tradition and the ways of the way and how that differs a lot from the way that Din's been living, the way that everyone's been living in the galaxy. So I can't wait to see like how does this clan that lived in the caves adapt to living in like the real world and having to deal with like the politics of things and the people around them, not just their own desires. They got to deal with everybody else too. So I think that's going to be part of the conflict going forward. But yeah, I'm really liking how this is going so far. If it wasn't for this episode, I would have been saying, oh, I don't know what's up with the plot. But it's been okay so far. Now I'm saying I know it's at the plot, and it's been r good so far. And I'm hoping that what we are like halfway through the season only, and we seem to have gotten everything kind of in place for a really exciting last half. I'm curious how they build it, because when I was first watching this, I thought, oh, the Covert is like, they seem to be the bad guys of this series, you know, like they're the oppressive cult that like was restricting Din and how he could live, but they're humanizing him a lot in these last couple of episodes. But I want us to remember too the final scene of this episode where we find out that Greef Karga, oh God, who's the character that was when missing last season? He was the main antagonist for a couple of seasons. Moff Gideon, he was in fact not tried for his crimes at all. He was captured seemingly by Mandalorians. So I feel like that's something that's out there too, that I think the Armorer may have had a role to play in that kidnapping, that she may have at least some knowledge of it happening and didn't share that with Din. I think the Armorer has her own motivation she's playing at. I think when she tells her, take off your Bo-Katan, take off your helmet, you're fine, you're all good. I wonder if there's some motivation to kind of make her feel like an outsider, make her feel like she's part of both of these worlds, so she has to choose for herself which one she wants to be a part of, right? Is there going to be a point where she has to choose to wear a helmet, not because it's the way, but because she wants to wear it, you know? And is that kind of what the Armorer are setting her up for? I feel like there's more to this than just, oh, Bo-Katan, you've walked both worlds, go find some people for us. You know, I think there's a motivation to the Armorer all her own. Was she trying to turn Din and Bo-Katan against each other, trying to see how they're going to work now that, you know, they've swapped places a bit and now Din's the insider and she's kind of like this middle person who's halfway in, halfway out? Yeah, I'm really curious how they're going to do this, because yeah, the Armorer for me was like a not character for the first couple seasons. Like, she was there to build the armor and say like a couple cool lines here and there, but this episode alone, it feels like we've gotten more with her and more of a look at her, and kind of this mysterious way they portray her with the music and the lighting. She has this kind of ominous presence still like within the narrative. So I think there's more to her than just pure, you know, good motivation for the good of Mandalore. I think there's going to be a conflict between what is the good of Mandalore, what is her idea of that versus Din's, versus Bo-Katan's, versus, you know, the New Republic's, versus Moff Gideon's. That's going to be what I think this is about ultimately by the end of the season. Yeah, I definitely think we're building up towards a three-way conflict of Bo-Katan, Din Djarin, and the Armorer all wanting to claim themselves the true heir by the end of the season. Yeah, definitely. I didn't notice that, but I think now that you pointed it out, that's a really good point. They probably are going to have him take off his helmet and don't want it to be the weirdo thing of his voice of Jon Favreau until suddenly his helmet comes off and it's not anymore, or the deal of the dubbing. I feel like that's a good call. Forgot about that. Yeah, and Bo-Katan would have that conflict of, do I bring this person to Din? Do I bring him to the New Republic? Do I let him be a victim of his own circumstances and walk away from this and say nothing? I'm liking it. I'm all Mandalorian out. I'm definitely Mandalorian out. That was a lot of Mandalorian talk. What if I like Zodiac and I also like Keira Knightley? Interesting. I might add that to the list, Joe. Your negative review pulled me in. Oh, it's one of those, you know. Interesting. John Wick 4 was like the craziest, coolest action movie I've ever seen in my life. I was like jaw dropped to the floor watching that movie. You walk out of the thing and your jaw hurts from the smiling the whole time. And if the Continental show can bring me that level of awesome action, or even a fraction of that, to the Peacock platform, I'll be really happy. And the fact that it's not a series, it's just like a 4-part, I think, or 3-part episode miniseries, I think will allow them to up the ante, allow them to give themselves some big actions and big spectacle, because when you're in the John Wick name, you got to live up to that, right? So I'll watch this show. The Mel Gibson attachment makes me really, really weary, because I don't really want Mel Gibson to go and have his like Keanu Reeves kind of revival, all of a sudden. I don't think he's one that needs or deserves that kind of acclaim revival, but maybe he gets killed off the first episode, then we'll be fine. Yeah, it's really good for Showtime, especially for like a second season. You know, they usually do okay with like their premieres, and then once they come to the follow-up seasons, they just kind of like splat and flop. But I'm not yet onto the second season yet, but I watched the first season and I loved it. So if you don't know the premise, this takes place partially in the late 90s, where it follows this high school soccer team, these young girls who get in a really shocking plane crash, and they end up in the woods stranded, and they have to fight to survive and push themselves to some pretty extreme lengths to survive. You know, very Lord of the Flies premise. They're there for like a good amount of time. So when you're out in the woods for a few months, you gotta, you know, really break your morals and push who you are as a person. And you get to see that from these people, but you also get to see several times throughout the episodes, they'll flash forward and you'll see them at like a temporary time, like a 2021, 2022, whenever the series is coming out, and you get to see them now as adults and kind of piece together the mystery of what happened to them in the woods. How do they become who they are as adults? And they kind of deal with this slight edge of the supernatural, like maybe something supernatural happened to them out in these woods. Maybe not. Maybe they just kind of lost it. And you spend the first season trying to piece those things together and getting a few answers, but not a lot of answers. So season two promises to give us even more of the answers they teased in the first season. I can't wait to check out the second season of this, because the first season really, really, really impressed me. And I wouldn't have watched it if it wasn't for the fact that the second season came out, you know. So that's what happens when you renew a TV show that might not be getting huge, huge ratings. All of a sudden, more people are going to come and watch it in the second year, you know. I believe you have to have the Showtime edition on Paramount Plus, but I'm not quite sure, actually, now that I think about it, because I do have the Showtime edition on there. It's only like $3 more or whatever. I feel like my MVP of the week is tough because it's technically last week. But I do think that I'm at best, you know, you got to give it to the man himself, the man who, you know, might have been at the bottom of the Star Wars totem pole, getting the beatings, getting, you know, really, really mocked. And now he's getting the praise. He's really had a huge comeback. And I feel like it's been his week. He had a great post on social media, like a little video on the Star Wars Twitter that was nice, and I think it was cool to see him go almost from a single scene from someone that the entire Star Wars fandom was mocking and making fun of, to someone that the entire fandom was like rallying around and wanting to see more of. You know, even the most toxic, I think, fans were having, well, not all of them. I'm sure there's certain amounts of fans that were mad about certain elements of him coming back, but I feel like it was a nice uniting moment for the fandom, almost like when Luke Skywalker came back and everyone was kind of hyped. But this even more so, because it's like a real person. It's like a meta narrative to it too. So he's my MVP. The Mandalorian? I feel like it would be a lot of fun to see Jake Lloyd pop up. You know, he's had a tricky life, but I feel like he's at a point where it'd be kind of nice if he showed up and played, you know, like a bartender or a guy in some store or something. You know, it'd be fun to have him be like a small character. He shows up, he kind of talks to Din for a second, and you're like, oh, look, that, good for him. He's back. He's here doing something cool, you know, and then he's gone. I like it. Yeah, okay, whatever. Here's what I want, Joe. I want a Wookiee to show up, you know, and you find out when you look at the credits that the Wookiee, the guy in the costume, was Harrison Ford.